Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the August 18th, 2014 show on phased retirement and financial awareness. I think a very timely topic, and who better to lead us than Ray Kirk. Ray worked for OPM. More importantly, his office provided training and guidance to agency benefit officers. Is that proper? Is that a proper description,
right.
Ray?
Good description, Bob. I'm glad to be here today.
Okay. So this should be good. We're going to turn the phone lines on in probably 10 or 15 minutes because I'd imagine it's going to generate some interest. So what is phased retirement and why is it being offered? So that's pretty global.
Well, phased retirement is a new authority that Congress passed a few years ago, and OPM has just published the final regulations that become effective in October. And what phased retirement does is it allows employees to partially retire and partially continue to work and receive half of their annuity and half of their salary. And it's designed to address the issue that the OPM recognized probably about the last decade of the what used to be or sometimes described as a retirement tsunami, that increasing percentage of federal employees are eligible to retire. And there's concern that they'll suddenly decide to all leave. So what phased retirement does, it creates a win-win for employees and the agencies. That one of the requirements of phased retirement is that it has a mentoring function. So those employees in phased retirement provide some knowledge transfer to the agencies. And then it also gives employees an opportunity to phase into retirement, to ease into retirement if they're not sure they want to make that big jump.
Okay, who's eligible?
Well, in order to be eligible, first of all, you have to be eligible for eligible for retirement. You have to have a SERS employee has to have 30 years of service and be 55, or 20 years of service and 60. And a FERS employee has to be at their minimum retirement age and have 30 years of service or 20 years and age 60.
Okay. Is there any exception for people like the law enforcement community where they can't wait that long?
Right. Well, people that have mandatory retirement, like law enforcement officers, firefighters, air traffic controllers, are not eligible for phased retirement. The idea is that this is to ease the transition into retirement, and the goal of those programs is to have a young and vigorous workforce, which is why they have a maximum age, and so they are not eligible.
Okay. Well, that fits your definition. So let's say that and I want to do this. Why would I want to do this? I'm on the edge. Should I retire? Should I not? Can I put my foot in the water, and then if I don't like it, can I pull it back out?
Yes, you can. And there's a couple of ways you can test it. One of the requirements that was in the OPM final regulations, which was one of the issues that it took a long time to actually resolve, was that a requirement for entering into phased retirement is that you have to have an agreement between you and your agency. And one of the things the agreement has to talk about is how long that period of phased retirement is going to last, whether and what conditions the agency will allow you to transition back to being a full-time employee, so in other words, to end your phased retirement, and make clear that you have the right to retire at any time. I mean, once you're eligible to retire, that's an employee has the right to just walk out the door and retire whenever they want.
Okay, now is this agreement that you mentioned a written document, or is it a memo of understanding, or what teeth are in it?
Okay, well, the regulations require that every employee that enters a phased retirement program has to have a written agreement between them and the agency, and it lays out some of the requirements of that agreement, that a couple of them being the, as I mentioned, the period of time and the rights of the employee. And that agreement has to be part of the phased retirement application that gets sent to OPM. So it has to be a formal document.
Okay, but trying to prep for this show, knowing that you would know the answers, I thought maybe I'd come up with some decent questions. And I went to the website, and in other words, if I'm an employee and you're my supervisor, What do I need to know? Is there a pamphlet that would explain it that OPM has generated so that I could take it and read it? And so I know what I'm getting into. Not that I'm not saying that this is bad, but, you know, it's like if I put my foot in the water and I don't like it, how can I back out? Or if I really like it, how long can I stay?
Well, right now there are no publications about it. The regulations were just published a week ago, and OPM is in the process of developing guidance and information that will be sent out to agencies. It'll be on their website, and some of that information will be targeted toward employees so that they can understand what they need to be doing and what they need to be thinking about. And a lot of the instructions will be to agencies so they understand what the agency responsibilities are and how they can should be conveying that information to employees.
Okay, when if you will, when you were at OPM and you were looking at the landscape, 2008 did something, I think, to soften the fear of the retirement tsunami. People's investments, either in or outside the thrift, dropped, and they thought, maybe I better stay on a little bit longer. I'd imagine that just has a more of a built-up group, me being one of them, the baby boomers, that are saying, okay, well, I'm going to push it back a year or two, and then we're just going to face the same thing later on. I don't know if they would still elect it or not. Who's to know? Nobody's going to know until then. But there's probably a drop-off in the retirement rate projected versus what actually happened because of what happened in 2008.
Well, there was a drop-off. The projections, I said back 2008, a little before that, as the then director of OPM coined the phrase the retirement tsunami, and there was concern that all these people would leave suddenly. They haven't done that, but eventually all those people are going to retire, and you have a bigger and bigger percentage of federal employees who are eligible to retire, and it just creates the risk, and prudent management strategies are to provide ways to address that risk or to just to ameliorate the threat. And as I said, the phased retirement includes a requirement for mentoring so that some of that knowledge gets transferred to the current employees before they do take that final step.
Okay, now mentoring, because I believe the younger percentage of the federal workforce has become a greater percentage of the workforce, just looking at the ads and looking at beginning career seminars that we do and the like. If I'm doing this, what would I be required to do with mentoring? Because everybody's got a different personality. Somebody might be very encouraging and somebody else might be, okay, I have to do this, that, and another thing. Is there some kind of reporting mechanism, or are they to tell them about their experiences or explain certain quirks in the law that they're dealing with that they need to have somebody with some knowledge tell them about other than just reading the law?
Well, OPM has been purposefully vague on the definition of mentoring. The law authorizing phased retirement has a requirement of 20% of the time should be spent on mentoring. But OPM has purposefully not given a hard definition of what mentoring is, because as you mentioned, it can mean different things to many people, and different organizational situations would lead to different requirements. In some organizations, it may make sense to be sitting next to somebody and looking over their shoulder or working with them in a mentoring relationship. Other organizations, it may make sense to define mentoring as just to document the information that you have in hand, to a brain drain, so the agency learns some of those folk ways and that they can pass that on to other people, or they're at least a reference that other people can look at.
That's good. In my world as an accountant, and especially a tax accountant, it's a world that not many have a grasp on unless they do it. And so when talking with a client or talking to a class, you have to go, well, this is the idea that we want to accomplish, but this is how we have to do it. Now, if I went way back when I first started working, I didn't have a clue how any of that stuff worked, but they did have a program for rookies, and they would explain, okay, this is the broad concept. You know, a tax return is to report income and generate taxable income, which generates income tax. But I didn't know how the pieces fit together. And I really appreciated those. We called them rookie classes, but they were really mentoring classes, and somebody that had, you know, been doing this for a while could appreciate that and go, okay, if you zig here, you have to zag there, or if you do this, or you can't do this. And I would hope that's what a mentor would do when they mentor somebody.
Right. I mean, that's certainly one model. I know, for example, at OPM, as they're training people to process retirement claims, they have a long period of formal training, but then as the new people doing processing transition to the work, they're assigned a mentor, somebody who works with them and kind of reviews the cases as they're doing it and is available on a one-on-one basis to answer questions. That's certainly one model of mentoring. They've had other agencies, because of their maybe their geographic dispersion, might just do it in terms of documenting what they're doing as opposed to hands-on mentoring.
You know, we in if you will, NITP's mission, we do seminars for all phases of federal employee. But when we go way outside the Beltway, there are people out in the field that maybe don't appreciate or understand what we're talking about, and they're somewhat pre-retirement. It's not that you all didn't do a good job on training the personnel officers, but I've always said this. I think the rules and regulations regarding retirement and federal retirement are harder than the tax code. I really do. Maybe I just deal with one part of the tax code. But, I mean, when I talk to the benefit speakers and they go, oh, well, you know, if you work 6 months back in the 60s for the post office, that could count. How do you know all that stuff?
You're exactly right. One of the points I always make when I'm giving the retirement seminars in the introductory remarks, as I point out, that it's almost as though Congress decided to make it as complicated as possible. That when you're thinking about a situation, think which one of these options is most complicated. And that's probably the way the retirement law is written.
Yeah. And then based on that complexity, sometimes there's opportunity. Social Security, for example. You know, do I take it now? Do I take it later? What do I do? If I have a spouse, do I file and suspend? That's a world unto itself.
Right. It's become increasingly more complex, and particularly FERS employees. When you had the older retirement system, civil service retirement system, or SERS, that it was pretty clear cut. But as the people who are referred to as the new system, although it's now coming up on 30 years old, that the federal employees retirement system, or FERS, they have a lot more decisions to make, and it's really important to understand these rules more so than a SERS person, because there's the three components. There's the basic annuity, there's a thrift savings plan, and then there's Social Security that you just mentioned.
Yeah. When we do those seminars, when I do the tax side of it, I said, no, you're going to have three potential sources of income in retirement. And just as simple as watch your federal withholding and or your state withholding, because if you have the proper withholding for each one separately, it will never cover the tax on the entire I call it the triple-decker sandwich for the IRS. You know, they're all going to be taxable, some more so than others, at the federal level. And if they do the best they can, it may not be. And only having lived through it with people that would come in, what did I do wrong? And I said, well, you didn't do anything wrong. You did it right. You just have to add three numbers together.
Right. And that planning has to start early in their careers. And that's something that people don't think about often enough, I think, that new employees think their retirement is so far away, but some of the decisions they make in those first 3 to 5 years are going to have an impact 25, 30 years later.
It's true. I also notice I deal mostly with pre-retirement, but I'll see 28, 30-year-olds in there. And I'll go up at the break. I think I've said this on the air a few times, but I just find it interesting that virtually everyone has the same answer. I said, you're awfully young to be in here. What, you know, why are you here? Not that I'm questioning your ability to come here, but why are you here? And they say, I don't want to mess up like everybody else in the class. Now, they don't know what somebody else has done, but they've heard stories about people that didn't plan or waited too late to plan, and then they were kind of in a bad way. So they wanted to understand it. And what I talk about is tax and finance, much more about tax. I have a couple agencies that just come in and have me talk about 3 hours about income taxes, and the under 30s are in there, and the 50-year-olds are in there. And I go, this is interesting. Don't know that I've ever had this before, but this is just the last couple years. All righty. So if somebody's contemplating this, and the first question they might have is, well, if I do phase retirement, what am I giving up in benefits? And what am I going to gain from this, just purely from a benefit standpoint? So if I do phased retirement, well, I'm not going to make as much on the job as I did before, but I'm going to be making more in retirement than I did before because I wasn't retired before. So are there any benefits that they would, I won't say lose, but not be enhanced if they just said, nah, heck, I'm going to go out in 3 years and I'm going to stay on the job?
Well, first, let me summarize what the overall structure is, that when someone goes into phase retirement, and the currently it's only a 50-50 split between being retired half-time and working half-time, so they're going to receive half of their annuity as of that point, and then they're going to receive half of their salary, and they're going to be working half-time. So their income is somewhere as a blend between full retirement and being fully employed. On the benefits side, they continue to be treated as an employee. So for health insurance, they're continued to receive the benefits and the agency contribution as though they were a full-time employee. For life insurance, their full-time salary is still the basis for the FEGLI life insurance, the federal insurance plan. For the other benefits, for example, survivor benefits, it's still treated as though they were an employee. So for just about all purposes except retirement, they are considered to be, except for the portion of their phase retirement, they are considered to be an employee. Now, leave and pay sick and annual leave would be accrued on a part-time basis, would be prorated so that they would be receiving half, each pay period be accruing half the amount of leave that a full-time person accrues.
Okay, so you probably said this before, but if somebody wanted to do this, they had to be retirement eligible to begin with, correct?
Correct.
So if something unfortunate happened to that person while in phase retirement and they were either disabled or deceased, then they would be treated as if they were retired. And so the survivor, if there was one, the survivor annuity would be what it would ever have been with full employment, but not the half employment.
If the person dies while they're a phased retiree, they're considered to be an employee at that time. So the benefits, the survivor benefits, are going to be based on what they would be as if they died just as a full-time employee. So, for example, the FERS survivor benefit has a death annuity, a death gratuity, and then a lump sum payment to them in addition to a potential survivor annuity. Serves just as a survivor annuity, but those are calculated as though the person had been an employee at the time that they died.
Okay. So what do I give up? What do I gain? So what do I gain other than the psychological? Let me try it, because I believe that you told me if I tried it and I didn't like it, I can always say, I want to get out of the pool. I want to go back to work full time. But that would be based on an agreement that I had in writing with my agency?
That's correct.
Okay, so it isn't just, okay, I'll give it a shot, and then if I don't like it, and I'd imagine some people, some agencies are going to be guarded with that because they're either shorthanded and they might want them back, they might not want them back, I don't know. So I like that idea that there's an agreement, but I suppose that agreement is going to vary by agency.
It is going to vary by agency, and the OPM's regulations make clear that it's, the whole phase retirement program is potentially subject for negotiated agreements if there's a labor organization in that agency. So I think that's going to help structure what those agreements include. And I think it's going to evolve over time. That obviously this fall, when people are first eligible to participate, I mean, agreements are probably going to be, I would guess they're going to be very conservative because agencies and employees are going to be concerned about things going wrong. But over time, I would suspect it'll just become more the way business is conducted, just as we saw over, I guess, the last 20 or 30 years, how alternative work schedules went from being very structured and rigid to virtually every agency has them, and there's a lot of back and forth in those things. I think we'll see an evolution in phase retirement similar to that.
Great. Now, you know I'm going to ask you about this. What is the impact on the TSP? Let's say that I'm working halftime. Can you do less than halftime?
No. Right now, the only option is to work halftime.
Okay. And probably this is an unfair question to ask. Can I still fully load my thrift in my halftime?
Yes, you can. For thrift savings purposes, you're an employee. So there's a couple consequences of that. One is you can't tap into your thrift savings plan without the tax penalties that would you'd be subject to for just withdrawing, closing out your plan. So you can't have the same benefits as being a retiree. But the other is that you can make the full contributions that an employee would be up to the tax deferral limits if you can still afford it. But I think something that particularly FERS employees have to keep in mind is that are they going to be able to make those contributions at the same level they were making them before? Because now their income is half what it was. So while the tax code allows them to make the full contribution, it's whether their income is going to allow them to make that full contribution. And the other factor that FERS employees have to keep in mind is that the agency match on their TSP contributions are going to be based on what the salary they're receiving. So that's going to be half their salary. So even if they keep the same TSP contribution level of their contributions, the agency is going to be contributing less.
Okay. And what you just said, let me remind folks what you just heard. The FERS individual is going to have half their salary and half their annuity. A FERS individual's annuity is, well, not generally, it's not as good as a CSRS. I'm not trying to pit the two against each other. So they're going to have half they would have received anyway and half their salary, which is probably still more than what they would have received had they been fully retired. Not probably, it's going to be.
Yes.
And what Ray mentioned is it's called front-loading the thrift while somebody's working. If they're just going to forget what we're talking about here today, so if somebody's going to retire at the end of June, you know, fully retire, currently they can put the full max of the thrift contribution in that six-month period, which, as Ray mentioned, would certainly cut down on the take-home pay. And now one can adjust the withholdings way down. It's kind of crazy to have high withholdings on money you're not going to pay taxes on, but it helps free up some dollars. But all that being said, in the phased retirement, we're going to have half of a smaller amount. But I guess they would, they wouldn't necessarily have the supplement. I guess they could. And then they would be relying on taking money potentially out of the thrift. So,
well, the planning for FERS people, and by the way, a FERS retiree on phase retirement is not eligible for the FERS retirement supplement.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the provisions.
I didn't think so.
As you pointed out, and you mentioned in the beginning of the show, that FERS has the three components, has the basic annuity, the Social Security, and TSP. When someone goes into phased retirement, a FERS employee goes into phased retirement, they can only access one of those three elements, the FERS annuity, and then they're going to be receiving half of that. So they're going to be it requires a lot of planning and assessment about just where they are financially, because they're not going to be kind of, it's not like their income is going to be truly 50% of their retirement income for that portion, because they're not getting any Social Security or the FERS supplement, which is a surrogate for Social Security if you're under 62, and they can't tap into their TSP yet. So it is a much more complicated decision for a FERS employee, and not just, oh, this is a great deal, I can work half time and make more than half my pay.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because, again, in class when we talk about the thrift options, oftentimes that's tied into Social Security. So when somebody retires at X age, do they wait longer to apply for Social Security to get the bump up that they would if they after age 66? Pretty attractive. But how do they eat? And so then they would rely on the thrift for distributions to make up the gap because they're not taking the Social Security. So maybe now, I don't know if this is, I think this is an unfair question to ask, but I'll just ask it out loud. If during that period of time the person was in that situation, they want to do this, they want to help, and they like the idea that they're testing the waters, could they, and they have to wait till they're at least 55, could they transfer some of the money out of the thrift into an IRA, which would not be the greatest thing to do if they're going to start accessing it before 59 and a half, although there's ways around the penalty. They're not usually easy to follow. Then they have to say to themselves, how am I going to pay my bills?
Well, it's a you're just outlining the things you're talking about, indicate why it's such a complex situation. And as I said, particularly for FERS employees, have to look carefully at how they're going to pay the bills, because they're getting not able to tap into all the sources of retirement, what their future retirement income would be when they're fully retired.
Yeah, I think OPM took an unnecessarily hard rap for how long this took to get the regulations out. Just think of all the variables. We're just hitting a few today, and I'm scratching my head, and I'm sure other people are listening that have special situations, whether it's today or whether they listen while the show is broadcast at other times over the next week. There's a lot of thought process that goes into it.
There's a lot went into it, and I know one of the major issues that OPM struggled with was addressing what turned out in the final regulations to be that agreement with the agencies. Exactly what should be included in that agreement and how hard they can hold the agency to the commitments that they want, the agencies might want, and how hard the employees can be held to commitments that the employees might want. Or actually, it's the reverse. The agencies are going to be interested in the commitments of the employees, and the employees are going to be interested in the agency's commitments. But working out those details was one of the big struggles they had.
Yeah. We have a friend of the show, if you will, and I'm reasonably certain he lives in California. And we were emailing yesterday, believe it or not, and he actually mentors people now. He works full-time. And he helps, and he'll ask questions about somebody at work that maybe has a particular issue. That was mentioned, this is ideal for you. And I'm not so sure he agreed with that, but he'd probably mentor him anyway. But, you know, somebody in that situation would like this. But the FERS individual, the impact on the thrift, and I didn't think of this until you just said it, if the agency match is less than some of the projections somebody had made to say, well, if I stayed in service till X age, but now we're going to go out earlier and receive half, then it's going to cause those projections to be inaccurate because we don't have as much of an agency match.
Right. Not only the agency match, but also there's the issue of, is the employee going to be able to sustain the same level of contributions? Just if, say, they're putting 10% of their salary in, and now they're getting half of their salary, are they going to be able to put that same amount in actual dollars? Because that's now 20% of their salary.
Yeah, this is good. Now, the guests next week, Dan Seip and Thomas Lee are going to come in, and I got to give them credit. I was meeting with them, knowing them for a number of years. They're financial types, sharp cookies. And they said, no, it's not a three-legged stool, it's a four-legged stool. And people miss the fourth leg because it's invisible. It's called strategy.
Right.
So unless you have a strategy of how to make those three legs, or in the case of the CSRS, the two legs work, you got to have that. Otherwise, you're just flailing around, and one would hope that they don't flail around in retirement, because retirement is sensitive to mistakes that you can't make up for that easily.
Right, and just actually throw yet another complication into that strategy.
Okay.
Is that the Social Security leg is also going to be affected, because your Social Security average earnings is going to be reduced by working a phased retirement, because you're going to be at a lower salary for Social Security purposes.
Okay, so if I'm not mistaken with this one, with regards to Social Security, you nailed that. If somebody has to be 55 at a minimum to do this, right?
Right.
Most likely, they may not have 35 years of the highest compensation level. So if they did this, then they would definitely not have 35 years of the highest compensation level.
Right.
If they stayed on, they may or may not, depending on when they left. But somebody might scratch their head on that one. Or, on the other side, if somebody's my age, maybe they have 35 years, and if they did this, it really wouldn't impact them that much because they've already got the 35 years.
Right, but I think the important thing is going back to that the fourth leg, the strategy, and looking at those projections that you may have been doing your retirement planning for the last 5 years, 10 years, based on projections, a certain level of TSP contributions, both yours and the agency's, and based on projections of what your Social Security benefits would be. They very well may be affected by being a phased retiree, and so I would recommend before you make the jump into phased retirement, you redo all those projections and make sure that not only the income you're going to have be available while you're a phased retiree, but after you're fully retired, how that's going to be impacted.
All righty. I think you may have answered this, but I just want to drive it home or refresh my memory. How long can a person remain on phased retirement?
Okay, there is no limit in the law or regulations on how long you can be a phased retiree. The limit would be in the agreement between the employee and the agency. So up front, they come to an agreement that they're going to be a phased retiree for whatever, 3 years, 5 years, or some other agreed upon length of time.
Okay. And would there ever be an agreement with the agency, because as we talked about, it's going to vary within the agency, that you have to do, can it be less than 50%, or is it 50% and that's it?
Right now it's 50%. The law allows OPM, said that that's the starting place for the authority, and gave OPM the flexibility to adjust that after some experience. And OPM has opted into regulations to just start with the 50-50 split, so that because it's a new experience for OPM also. They have to process these cases and when people go into phased retirement, so they don't want to add all of these extra complications on the first go-around.
I cannot imagine the number crunching and the actuarial assumptions and whatever that somebody would have to do if they would say, well, it can vary up to 50%. Listen, I got all the respect for OPM, but I don't think I'd want to be in that seat trying to figure that one out.
It would complicate everything. It would complicate, and it would just complicate people's planning, individuals, in terms of the ideas we talked about, doing your projections of what's retirement's going to, if you have all these, a range of options, would just make the world very complex.
Okay. Now, in your when you had your OPM hat on this, I'd imagine you were pretty closely involved with this subject, or, putting together the regs for it.
I was involved in some of the thinking about what the issues were when I was working at OPM. The legislation had passed, and we're trying to figure out, well, just what does it mean? As I mentioned earlier, Congress, given a choice, leans toward the complex. So it's just deciphering what the actual authority is in the law.
Okay, so then I'm going to ask this, and I think, again, I know the answer depends on the agency agreement, but let's say that an individual elected to do this, and after a month, two, three, or four, decided that, one, either they couldn't afford it, or two, they didn't like it, and they want to get back out. Is there a minimum period of time that they must do this? And after the period of time, then they can get back out of the pool, so to speak, or stay in the pool.
Well, of course, getting back out could mean one of two things. It could mean you go back to being a full-time employee, mm-hmm. or it means you decide to be a full-time retiree. And the second one, being a full-time retiree, the employee can decide at any point. That's 100% their decision. The issue of going back to being a full-time employee is one of the elements of the agreement with the agency, that it would lay out that the circumstances that they can negotiate with the agency. They wouldn't have specific, you know, if A and B conditions are met, but it would lay out the procedure to go through if you want to go back to being a full-time employee.
Okay, so people should do their homework.
Right.
And the homework is going to really be done at the agency level because the agreements are different, right? I'd imagine the law enforcement agencies, again, they retire a lot younger, so it may be a short subject, but the supervisory staff is generally not required to retire at a younger age. Or a sensitive agency in the sense that they have a mission to accomplish with fewer employees, do they have to offer this?
Agencies don't have to offer it. It's an authority that they have. Agencies have to agree to offer the program, and employees voluntarily raise their hand and say, I want to participate. So it's not required. As I mentioned, it is subject to negotiated agreements. And so I suspect over time that a lot of employee organizations are going to put that on the bargaining table to make it an element. That's assuming, of course, that employees actually like it. I know when I teach seminars, it's an area that has lots of interest right now. But, you know, after some people have some experience and we get those stories of, oh, this was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, or what a disaster, you know, then it's going to start influencing people's decisions about whether they want to go forward with it.
Okay. I'm going to try to put myself in the federal employees' decision-making mode. Okay, I've worked, I've had a nice career, I'm happy with the job, but I'd like to pull over a little bit and enjoy life more. This might really provide me an opportunity to stay on the job that I like so much and work half-time, and then the other half-time I do whatever I'm going to do. I'm going to have to make sure I can afford this, but I'm not wedded to it necessarily, but I need to know that my agency's agreement is going to allow me to pull back or to pull out. You know, I might say, no, you know, I still have the stress because people still come to me within the agency because I've been there long enough to be able to give them an answer, and I still might have, and one of the reasons people, I think, retire, besides age, is they're just burned out. Not that they have a bad job, but being on any job for 35, 40 years tests one's ability to handle it on a daily basis. So they need to be informed, and they need to understand this. And I went to the website before I came on the show and developed the questions, but I just looked at that thing and you know, it kept going on and on and on and on. And I'm not a real patient type. I'm not impatient in the sense of nasty. I just, give me the answer. I need it in 10 seconds. And if I can't get it in 10 seconds, then I have another question. Why did I ask the question to begin with? So everybody doesn't have the ability to tap into Ray Kirk. What did it, when they were doing this, did they try to project the number of folks that they figure would bite on it and say, okay, 10% of the retirees, 20% of the retirees, 50% of the retirees would go for it? I mean, they had to have some idea, I suppose.
Right. There were some projections. I don't recall the exact numbers, but OPM's projections were pretty low, that it would be a small percentage of employees that would be interested in it. And of course, no one has the experience to say how accurate those projections are. I know that when I teach the retirement seminars, there's a lot of interest that employees have and certainly learning more about it. So it's, and I think there's going to be an initial surge of interest because people want to test the waters and then based on their experience.
Okay. There's an email on here. I just went back through it. And the question is, if somebody is in phased retirement, would they still be able to travel on the employment side for the agency's mission?
Yes, because they're still an employee. And the regulations do have a provision and talk about, well, you're on a part-time schedule. And just like any part-time employee, that if there's a work requirement that in one given pay period you might have to change your schedule and work more than your regular part-time schedule. For example, you're going on a trip, so you can't work half the day while you're at the wherever the site is that you're traveling to. So you can make those adjustments. The idea is that it's not an ongoing change in your schedule, but there's certainly the contingencies of the agency's needs.
Okay, great. We have a caller.
Hi.
Hi there.
Question about, I'm in SERS. I understand that Social Security reduces my pension at 62, and if I did this phase retirement, I would be 62. Would Social Security still reduce my pension at 62 if I did the phase retirement?
Well, of course. Well, let me answer two versions of your question. First is the overall Social Security benefit. If you apply at age 62, then there is an earnings test until you're at your full Social Security retirement age. And this year, it's a little over $15,000 a year. And if you make more than that, then there's reductions in your Social Security benefits begin. And most likely, if you're a phase retiree, that your salary that you're receiving is going to be greater than that earnings limit. And so you are going to have the reduction in your Social Security as a result of that. The other side of, since you're a CERS employee, that you might be subject, your Social Security might be reduced because of the windfall elimination provision, which is a provision in Social Security that addresses people who are receiving annuities not subject to Social Security, which your CERS benefit would be, and then reduces the Social Security formula. That would take place under phase retirement just as it would under full retirement.
Okay. Something to think about.
Right.
A lot to think about, isn't there?
Yeah, too much. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. So if we step back now and look at it, what we've covered is we've talked about how it works in concept, but we recognize that it's going to vary with the agency's agreement. So in other words, conceptually, this is how it works, but the agency agreement might call for a tightening here or there or a loosening. Some folks that are under 55 probably should not listen to the show because they can't do this, right? In retirement. All right, and then do we look at full retirement? Somebody's fully retired, can they go back in?
No, at full retirement, where I was thinking of what happens when somebody ends the phase retirement and they go into be fully retired. How is their annuity adjusted? What happens to it? And so, you know, we talked about when you go into phase retirement, you're receiving half of your annuity and half of your salary. Then when you go into full retirement, your annuity is recomputed based on your new high three salary and your new, let me back up. While you're a phase retiree, your annuity is going to receive any COLAs that it might have. So that'll go up, particularly if you're a CERS employee, you'll get COLAs every year. If you're a FERS employee, if you're over age 62, you'll get COLAs. So you have that portion of your annuity is increasing. Then the other half of your annuity that you haven't been receiving yet will be computed based on all of those years of service that you had, including the phase retirement period of time, and then your salary based on your final your average high three salary, including those years that you were working as a phase retiree, and it'll be using the full-time equivalent of that salary. So even though you were actually paid half-time, the high three will be assuming that it was the full-time salary.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I hope everyone wrote that down.
Right. Well, it's very complicated, and that I'm sure will be made more clear in the guidance and instructions that OPM puts out. But as you mentioned, it is another reason why OPM took so long in thinking about this, because they have to build systems and procedures and information to do all these calculations.
Okay. I was just... Ray, I'm not really being rude here looking at my iPhone, but we get emails in. Somebody just emailed and said they just announced that federal per diem rates will remain unchanged for 2015 from what they are in 2014. You know, it's just because we talked about per right. diem for a second. So anyway, it's not directly on the subject, but since we brought it up, I appreciate the email. And by the way, for those of you that are going to email us after 10:58, which is about 8 minutes, it's for your benefit, FORYOUR, benefit, at NITPINC.com. For your benefit, all one word, at NITPINC.com. All righty, so I'm sure we're going to get some questions after this, as we do every week, and that's fine. So, but we'd sure love to talk to someone. That question what the caller just had, I'm sure there'd be some other ones that would have similar questions. And I guess the real question is, and I'm going to start maybe taking an individual poll at the seminars, how many people are considering, why are you considering it, which I never try to cross into their personal life because I'm talking about money usually. But I might just say if anybody's comfortable answering that question. So I'd like to get a feel for it because we've talked about it in class, much more so with the benefit people than with me. And now I think we have a better handle on it since these regs have come out.
I know when I do the seminars and people bring up things like, and you had mentioned earlier that some people are just tired of working and they think if they worked on phase retirement, it would be make the life less stressful. There's also a lot of people who have outside interests that maybe they've become involved in a volunteer activity and they see this as an opportunity to be able to devote more time to that volunteer activity, but still maintain a level of income that they so they can afford to make a,
so they can afford
an active volunteer.
Yeah, I like your comment about being really sober looking at this cash flow, not to put the FERS and the CSRSers against one another, but FERS be more sensitive to this.
That's right. It's a result of the structure of the programs. It's not that one, and that's another point I always emphasize in retirement seminars, is that for people who have a full career as a federal employees, the FERS and the CSRS benefits are very comparable to each other, but they have a different mix of the way the benefits are paid out. And that mix, phase retirement turns out to have a bigger impact on that mix for FERS employees than it does for CSRS employees.
Especially with that agency match, if they're limiting into it. Anyway, we've got another caller.
I was wondering if the only loss to the FERS employee would be in the Social Security high 35 years and the TSP?
I missed the beginning of the question. What is,
yeah, I'm sorry. It was a little...
The impact on the Social Security and the TSP?
Yes. Is that the only impact on the FERS employees?
Well, it's part of the planning process is the... Because those the TSP and the Social Security is going to be affected by now working for whatever period of time you're in phase retirement at a lower salary than you're making, it's going to reduce the long-term amounts because it's going to reduce on TSP, the agency contributions. Social Security is going to reduce your average salary. So that's part of the planning process. That other than that, in terms of the benefits that OPM is providing, the health insurance, life insurance, the annuity side of it, there's not going to be a difference between how FERS and CSRS are going to be affected by it.
I think I could look at this another way. If somebody already had the high 35 and went into phase retirement, probably isn't going to impact them a lot. But if they didn't have the high 35 and went into phased retirement, it's going to be very hard with half your salary to hit the max Social Security. Some job descriptions provide that, but very few. Half of, let's call it $110,000, somebody would have to be making $220,000. They're not a ton of those jobs. And so if that was your question, yeah, that would be a consideration. And then coupled with that, the agency match not being as much, the financial side of this then deserves more of a focus. Was that your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Right, and just to follow up on Bob's point, I think what you'd want to do is you have those projections. For example, if you received a Social Security statement that had a Social Security projection, you want to redo those projections with the new salary that you would be receiving during the period of phase retirement.
Okay, and then I always have to say something tax-wise. I apologize, but tax-wise, I'm not so sure you're going to be in a lower bracket if you do this. You're going to have half of what would otherwise be a higher income than retirement income would be, and then you'd have half of whatever the annuity was going to be and some other things added together. I don't think there's a grand tax incentive to do this. I don't think anybody should ever make a decision based on taxes alone. Finances should always rule.
Right. The tax bands are narrow enough that I think most people are going to have a not dramatic shifts in their tax.
I only say that because in class, I'm always, well, we're going to be in a lower bracket. I go, I'm not so sure you are. And, you know, you just walk through, not using any numbers, but you stack this on top of this on top of this. I don't think it's going to be, especially if somebody's maximizing their TSP at that point because their taxable income is. Anyway, I'm getting off into tax. I'm sorry, y'all. Anyway, again, what we covered is we did the basics, who can, who can't. Agency agreements will vary, which would allow you to do one thing in one agency that might be different than in another agency. Once you elect it, how long can you do it? It's going to be, I guess, an agency decision, how short you can do it. And first, people need to scratch their head a little bit more so than the CSRS. I know I'm going to get in trouble with that comment, but I really don't think it's unfair.
I agree. I don't think it's unfair. But more generally, everybody needs to look closely at what the impact is going to be on financially and what's the impact going to be on just their overall life. About if they're going to go into phased retirement. One of the upsides of phased retirement is it simplifies that transition into retirement, but it's still not, you know, a clear-cut, hard line for everybody.
Okay, I guess that's why we're on the air and we do the seminars. Nothing clear-cut. Excuse me. Ray, thanks for being on and providing all this great information. Thanks to you all for listening. Next week, we're going to have two folks, I mentioned it quickly, Dan Sipes and Thomas Lee, and they're going to talk about the fourth leg for the three-legged stool strategy and the third leg for the two-legged stool. Anyway, thanks for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.